There we go. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. Go down, music. Thank you. Once again, welcome, folks, to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Boy, we're here live this week, which is nice. I haven't been here as much as I've wanted to in the past couple weeks. I apologize. I hope you all enjoyed the pre-recorded show last week. It was all new, and if you missed it, please grab that on the podcast. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, we do appreciate that, but we do enjoy also people listening live. So we do have a chat room. The chat room is open, and if anybody wants to talk there, listeners of the show can talk to each other. I usually only check it during the break. It's way too distracting to try to run the show and also watch the chat room. But you're free to chat yourselves up there, and that's that. So if you'd like to call in tonight, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And getting started here, as usual, we start with the random political rhetoric generator. Tonight's randomly generated rhetoric is, I will not stand for an America where healthcare bureaucrats and flight attendants can corrupt our perseverance. Always love the random political generator, always good for a laugh. In a bit of news, I'd be remiss to not mention that this coming Saturday is the Libertarian Party of Kentucky's annual state convention. The convention is where we do business. Any registered Libertarian, anyone who is registered to vote as a Libertarian, can vote for candidates that are up for election at that convention, and that will be basically the Libertarian Party's version of a primary for areas, statewide candidates, like U.S. Senate, and for anything happening in the 5th Congressional District. And so if you're interested, you can go there. It's on the convention agenda. If you go to lpky.org, lpky.org, the schedule calls for political candidate voting to occur between 4 and 5 o'clock Eastern time. So if you want to cast a ballot for the candidates, you may do so by coming to that convention. Also, if you want to participate in the business, the website has information on how to sign up and be part of the business meeting. That is not free, but it is available. So lpky.org if you're interested in that. So speaking of the Libertarian Party, you know, we've spent a lot of time here in the past, I don't know, a few months, talking about the effect of libertarians in campaigns and what does it mean for campaigns when there's a three-way race rather than a two-way race. And specifically, we've been talking about the special elections that we've seen here in the past few months. And right now, there is a special election going on in Florida in the, the 13th Congressional District, I believe. Yes, I'm pretty sure that's right. It's not saying in this story. But there it is, 13th, yes, 13th Congressional District. And in that race, there is a Democrat, a Republican, and a Libertarian. And that's not just the beginning of a bad joke. It's there is a Democrat, a Republican, and a Libertarian in the race. And the polls are all over the place. But already the Republicans are out beating the drum once again that the presence of the Libertarian candidate is destroying their chances for the Republican to win, which destroys the chances to repeal Obamacare. Well, all right, let's see here. First of all, we've already been over the whole Republicans and Obamacare thing, I think, a number of times. But just in case you were missing and aren't keeping score at home, the Republicans had the opportunity through the budget process, if they wanted to take a hard stand, to basically refuse to fund Obamacare. And some people will say, well, that's crazy. I mean, geez, it's the law of the land. And I love hearing that from Democrats especially, who then go on to defend the fact that Obama has delayed and changed how things are being implemented and the bureaucracy has changed how things are being implemented and over and over and over and over and over again. And So the point is that the Republicans, if they had the gall to do anything about it, could have done something about it, even without the majority in the Senate. They did pass a number of bills in the House and, you know that they're not going to be heard in the Senate because Harry Reid won't let them be heard. But the reality is that the Republicans, through the budgeting process, could have put a halt to Obamacare, and they could have done it for the last 3-4 years, and they have not. They haven't. And so, first of all, that whole argument is silliness. Secondly, and more importantly, this one seat in the House doesn't change anything. I mean, it's not like the Republican in this race is all of a sudden the tipping point of, oh, well, if this guy gets in, he won't vote for the budget. He'll cut the funding. We're just one vote shy. That's not the case. And so that whole fear-mongering argument is ridiculous on its face, just absolutely ridiculous. Secondly, depending on which polls you read, which polls you believe, I mean, here's the problem. In these special elections, they're very low turnout races. And you never really quite know who's going to turn out because a special election is, obviously by its name, special. It's not something that happens very often. And yes, you can apply some math. But typically special elections are very, very, very low turnout races. And what it comes down to in the end is who can turn out the most voters for them, for themselves. You know, that's a real opportunity, by the way, for third parties in general to do very well. And we do very well in special elections generally because in a special election, you've got a very low turnout, which means only people who are motivated to go to the polls for that particular race are the only ones who go to those polls. And additionally, because it is a special election, you don't get quite so many of the lockstepping straight ticket voters that aren't really using their brain. They just go and vote at the polls every 2 or every 4 years. And so as a result, you see a much lower turnout. So in this particular case, the last poll was run by St. Pete Polls. And that shows that the Republican is winning over the Democrat and that the Libertarian has 6.6%. But a previous poll, and here's the problem with these polls, it's funny. So that poll was taken on February 12th. A poll taken February 9th through 11th shows the opposite, that the Republican has only got 37% of the vote, that the Democrat has 46% of the vote. In other words, the Democrat's winning by 9 points, and that the Libertarian's picking up 12% of the vote. And I think that's very interesting. Also, that second poll here, the slightly older one, showed that 5% of voters were undecided, yet the poll taken the very next day, only 2.4% were undecided. Somehow 2.6% of the voters suddenly made up their mind. What? And it all comes down to a number of things. Methodology, it comes down to a lot of different things. And so, and there's polls out here that they don't even include the Republic or the Libertarian candidate. And I think that's an interesting metric to look at because as you look through the polls, they're claiming that the Libertarian is doing more harm to the Republican than to the Democrat. But one of the polls in particular showed that the Republican was bleeding off registered Republicans in two directions, that 16% of registered Republicans were planning on voting for the Democrat, while 14% of registered Republicans were planning on voting for the Libertarian. So the Republicans losing, at least in that poll, and that was one of the ones that showed the Republican losing, that showed that more of the Republican voters were going to Democrats than they were to Libertarians. And so certainly you could make that claim, well, if the Libertarian wasn't in a race, the Republican would have more votes. But couldn't you make the same claim that if the Democrat wasn't in the race, the Republican would have more votes? I mean, it's kind of a silly argument. At the end of the day, again, it's going to come down to turnout. It's going to come down to message. And one of the big things with having a third person in the race is that you can't just run a straight-up negative campaign. Because in a negative campaign, you do harm to both yourself and to the person being attacked. And typically, you actually do more harm to the person being attacked than you do the person doing the attacking, right? So the person running the attack ads does get harmed, but not as bad as the person being attacked. And that's why they're still used, especially in a two-way race. What it does do is it frustrates voters. It depresses the vote totals, or turnout, rather. It depresses turnout, and that's one of those things that leads people to believe that Republicans do better when turnout is low. That's not true. It's just Republicans are really good at negative campaigning. And so when they win and they run an effective negative campaign, when they're running a negative campaign, they are going to see lower turnout as a result. Now, certainly there are other ways to win, but that's part of their playbook. And by having a third choice on the ballot, it does screw up that playbook. There's no doubt. I mean, it doesn't even need to necessarily be a Libertarian. It could be an Independent. It could be even a Green. Because you end up with people frustrated with both the Democrats and the Republicans, because inevitably, when the Republicans start their negative ads, the Democrats start responding and putting out negative ads as well. And then the race gets ugly and stupid and petty, and voters get really frustrated. And so they end up just saying, you know what, I'm just going to vote for that other person. And they don't even know who that other person is or what they represent necessarily, which is unfortunate. But that's a result of the lack of media given to the third candidate in most races. And the reason there's a lack of media is that, well, first of all, in case you don't know, the media is pay for play. You got to be buying ads in order to get positive pieces out of a media outlet. And that's just the way it is. But also, they do say, well, you don't have enough money or you don't have enough support. Well, it's kind of a chicken and egg problem. The Democrats and Republicans walk in with a certain percentage of the population that drags their knuckles on their way into the polling booth and go, oh, Throop, I'm a Democrat. Or, oh, Throop, I'm a Republican. And that is true. There's just a group of people that no matter what, it's Democrats good, Republicans bad, or Republicans good, Democrats bad. And they're going to vote for the straight party line. They don't even look at who's on the ballot. And whatever. But there's also the fact that, you know, there is institutionally, people know what Democrats and Republicans are basically about. But there's a lot of confusion on what Libertarians are about, or for that matter, what the Greens are about, or especially what an Independent is about, because they have no affiliation as an Independent. And because the media is generally lazy, they don't do a very good job of profiling those races, and they don't care. They're like, well, that's not worth my time. And that's literally the mindset. It's not worth my time, which is unfortunate because it does a disservice to the voting public. If they never really know what's going on, then how can they make a rational decision on election day? But part of that has been partially overcome by the internet and non-traditional media, which is a good thing, as people are able to spread information and get around the stranglehold that the traditional media has had on communication. And I think that that's another reason why we're seeing better and better totals for Libertarians and Greens and Independents in general. I think it's simply a matter that people are getting around the old media and breaking through social media. And then once they've got enough traction there, the old media gets to the point where they can't ignore the person anymore, as was the case in the Virginia governor's race when the candidate started polling above 10%. All of a sudden, it was really hard to ignore that candidate because 10% is pretty big. So it is interesting to see the effect. And there's an effect, certainly. But is it a bad effect? And I would say that it's not a bad effect. And the reason I'd say it's not a bad effect is that actually makes it so that if you want to win in a three-way race, You need to actually be talking about solutions. You can't just be negative, because negative just pushes people over to the third candidate. It takes away the lesser of two evil game by having the third candidate in there. Now, not entirely. It doesn't completely remove the lesser of two evils game, but it does for many people. And that's why in particularly nasty campaigns, you'll see an independent or third-party candidate get higher vote totals, because it's just people going out and at that point casting a protest vote. And that happens too. But, you know, just like in the Virginia governor's election that happened last year, there's a lot of factors involved in these races, and one of them is money. If you had a Libertarian candidate that was funded as well as the Republicans and Democrats, they would be a lot more serious. They'd be taken more seriously by the media, if for no other reason than the media would want to get that advertisement dollar out of that campaign, which is terrible but true. And money does have an effect. Now, I have a story here that says that money doesn't matter as much, but I think that it does, especially in a race like this where it's low turnout and you're trying to convince the masses. Now, certainly, money doesn't matter in a race. For instance, chances are very good. It doesn't matter how much money the Republicans would spend in Louisville. Chances are very good they would not be able to defeat John Yarmuth. And that's been reflected, by the way, in the amount of money that candidates running as Republicans have been able to raise running against John Yarmuth, because typically speaking, people aren't stupid, especially the big donors, and will not invest a lot of money into a horrible losing cause. And for that matter, that's partially why people don't invest in third-party campaigns, because of the inherent disadvantages. There's a lot of people who think that they cannot win under any circumstance, and they refuse to give money to those. And I understand that. I just point out that they'd do a lot better if they had some money, and then if they had some more money, they'd do even better. You know, there was a point in 1992 where Perot could have won the election, and then he bowed out of the race, and then he came back in. He never wanted to win it, which was unfortunate. But the point is that with money, with a message, with especially right now, the voters are very, very angry. This is a time when an independent third-party candidate can win, even in a three-way race, and can win even against well-funded candidates, as long as they've got enough to get through the radio noise, to cut through the noise, to be able to get their message out, their positive message. They can win right now, and I really firmly believe that. There are times in history where, you know, they couldn't, but now is not that time. So, you know, if you're an independent candidate, if you want to win, especially at the local level where you can outwork someone and make up a difference in money, now is the time. And while the Democrats and Republicans filing deadline has passed, if you're a registered independent or registered as a member of a third party, it is still possible for you to get into any partisan race in Kentucky at this point. April 1st is the deadline for that, however. And so if you're going to get started, it's time to get started. And if you are looking at that type of race, you will need to learn what it takes to run. Depending on what you're running for, if it's a state house or state senate seat, you can call down to Frankfort and talk to those folks, and they actually are pretty helpful on helping you get started. If you're looking for a local race, many county clerks in the state have absolutely no idea how to handle a third-party or independent campaign and will, in fact, give you bad advice because they don't know any better. And I know this because I'm the one on the Libertarian Party side that gets all these things get escalated to, and then I get to make a phone call to the clerk and explain to them what the law is, which is always fun. Nothing like telling a bureaucrat how to do their job. That's always an awkward conversation. But it is possible. It's possible. Now, that said, third-party and independent candidates are also going to have to get savvier about how they run. I mean, for that matter, the people running within the main parties, the ones that are the quote-unquote insurgent candidates, need to be smarter about what they're doing. Because, again, the negative campaign is out there, and if you start doing well, they're going to hit you. A real campaign should be early on paying someone to do opposition research, not just on those they're running against, but themselves, so they know what other people will find out and try to put against them, so that they're ready to respond to those allegations, whether real or not. There's probably no better example of this right now than the Bevin campaign. Matt Bevin is running for U.S. Senate in the Republican primary against Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell is especially known for very ugly campaigns, very dirty campaigns, very negative campaigns. Been hit by some of this stuff that should have been slam dunk, easy to throw away and get rid of. It's been handled very, very poorly. In fact, I was talking to a friend on Friday or Saturday, I can't remember if it was yesterday or Friday, about how if Bevin wants to survive, if he doesn't want to get absolutely destroyed, he's going to have to get off his rear end, get his campaign staff, you know, in the room, and start hammering all this stuff out and start with a consistent message to challenge the things that have got him on his heels at this point. You know, the Herald Leader has a story, is this the end for Matt Bevin? And that's a very good question. It's the exact question. They brought this out yesterday, but I posed the question – oh, I'm sorry. They brought this out Thursday, I guess, a few days ago, Wednesday or Thursday. But I didn't read the story then. Well, it's been almost a week. I didn't read the story then. I've been busy with work stuff, obviously. That's why the show had to be pre-recorded last week. But following the news, I mean, Bevin's getting destroyed right now, personally destroyed. And unless he gets it going here, he's not going to survive this. His forward momentum in the polls has been halted. His staff is not running point on this, as far as I can tell. I don't even know if he has staff or what staff he has. But at this point, he's going to have to circle the wagons, get this stuff addressed, and make it go away. Letting it fester this long has been devastating to his campaign. Between the signing the SEC letter, my gosh, that's so easy to refute. How do you miss an opportunity there? I mean, you can say, yeah, I signed off on some document that one of my guys that worked for me wrote up, and I signed off that the numbers that were factual, as required by the SEC, you know, the regulatory body, the bureaucrats made me sign that document, whereas McConnell patted himself on the back signing the legislation that created the biggest bailout in history. So easy to respond to. So easy. But he didn't. And, you know, now they're calling him a con man and all this stuff because the MIT thing, which is silly, the MIT school stuff, whatever. I mean, that's like a local college having a college of business with after-hour classes and saying you went to that college. Well, you kind of did, but it wasn't really the full college. It's a different piece of the college. Whatever. So silly. But, again, they handled that terribly. Absolutely terribly. So is it the end of Matt Bevin? I don't know. But what I do know is if he doesn't get on this ball and address this stuff and kill it and make it go away once and for all, if these questions are still lingering a couple of weeks from now, a month from now, yeah, this is the end. It's what it is. So, and I see I've got Dale here in the queue. I don't know if he wants, it doesn't look like he wants to talk. So our friend Dale the Truth is listening in there. All right. So that's the point, is that Bevin has to get on the ball and solve his problems or he's done. And, you know, tying this back to the previous conversation, McConnell is running all of these negative ads right now. And it's funny, you look at the polls before the negative ads and you look at the polls after the negative ads. Before the negative ads, Matt Bevin was going to beat Allison Grimes, according to, you know, if the election were held that day. But McConnell was not. Or it was really close, right? It was either a tie or he was going to lose. Since they've put out the negative ads, I'm sorry, yes, it was a tie if I remember right. Since they did the ads, McConnell is now down by either 4 or 6 points to Grimes. And Bevin's even worse. So it's worse, right? The polls actually show that the negative ads against Bevin have worked. But the question then becomes, even if McConnell survives the primary, which at this point, if things continue as they are now, he will. But what damage has he done to himself? And is the damage so great combined with the 60% disapproval rate in the state for McConnell? Will those two things combined mean that Allison Grimes is our next senator? I don't know. And of course, tying it back again to the previous conversation, the Libertarian Party plans on fielding a candidate as well. And, you know, we don't play the lesser of two evils game on our side, and I haven't played that game for a very long time. If I don't like either candidate or any of the candidates running in a race, I just don't vote in that race. I encourage you to do the same thing. Votes should be earned. But all I know is at this point, Bevin needs to get his act together ASAP. And the real question is if he does not, has McConnell or will McConnell do enough damage to himself that he can't pull out a win? Very interesting political times. Very, very, very interesting political times. And now it looks like Dale would like to speak, so I'm going to bring Dale on. Dale, are you there?
Hello, Ken. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, sir.
You'd think I would have remembered to press the one key after hosting Sower for several years, right?
And that's the thing. I mean, I generally know that when you call, you're ready to talk. That's why I was kind of shocked that you hadn't.
Well, I appreciate that, Ken. A great show as always. I just quickly the show, you said something that I think bears repeating for the audience. We know this is a smart audience, but you had made the point about it being pay for play. Can you repeat that verbatim line about what you were saying about the media again?
Well, I don't have it written down, but basically the short answer is if you're not paying the media for ads, they're not reporting on you positively. And that's just the simple truth.
Yeah, and that's what I just think it bears repeating because, again, one example of this, I'm glad you brought out the fact that your Libertarian Party is also fielding a candidate, but I've been saying this all over this network, and maybe people will look it up and think, you know what? What he's telling us isn't just a conspiracy theory. Oh, deal, the truth is telling us the truth, and that is if you go to the Secretary of State's page, now don't go to the county clerk's page in Jefferson County because she doesn't want you to see all the candidates, but that's neither here nor there. But if you go to the Secretary of State's page, you will see there are not one, not two, but five Republicans have filed for the U.S. Senate seat, the seat held by incumbent Addison Mitchell Jerome McConnell Jr., and not one, but four Democrats have filed for the seat. And I just wonder, Ken,
yep,
even in this audience, how many people know that there are at least nine people running in this primary?
Yeah, and that's a very good point. And in some ways, shame on me for not bringing that exactly up, that there are more people in this race, and the media
is
ignoring
the media because
totally
what you just said. They're not running big money campaigns. And when you're at the Courier Journal,
yeah,
I guess the same thing would go for the Cincinnati Post or whatever publications are up your way. But if you're in the Courier Journal, they're not going to cover you unless you're also taking out big ads. Seems a little hypocritical and conflict of interest to me.
Well, what it does is it hurts the integrity of the media, and it does exactly what we've seen, is that the old media is in deep, deep trouble. You know, social media has changed things. But what it's changed is it's made people realize that there's more out there than the old media, that there's more information. People aren't being told the truth. People aren't being given the full truth. And that the old media seems to be either negligently or intentionally preventing people from finding out what's really going on, and people are not appreciative of that. And whether it's incompetence or devious, you know, reasons, they're not happy about it. And I think that's a major contribution to the downfall of the major media.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Ken. It would be laughable if this wasn't politics and civil duty we're dealing with here. I think you make a good point about if there's not a good candidate in a race, you don't have to vote. You shouldn't feel obligated. I'm one of those people who said for a long time I want lower voter turnout, not higher voter turnout, because I'm looking for quality candidates and quality voters, not quantity. And the point is, with all these people running, like you said, I don't fault you for not talking about them, but look at the Courier-Journal. I have to use that example because they're the dinosaur media here in my backyard. They'll interview candidates very reluctantly at the very end, like, okay, come on in, we'll interview, like pat them on the head. And then even though they wouldn't cover their campaign for months and months, they'll interview them, and verbatim they'll then come out and say, oh, well, they might have had a chance if they had a better publicity campaign. I'm like, really? You're the media.
Yeah.
You're the reason they're not getting covered. So you could have covered them earlier instead of now bitching because you didn't do your own job.
Well, and that's, you know, it's funny you bring that up. In 2011, when I ran for treasurer, they interviewed every other candidate on the ballot. There were 17 of us total. They interviewed 16 candidates because obviously one more was just too much, right? I mean, what's up with that?
You didn't get
an invitation.
You were that straw that
broke the camel's back. Yes. Fancy Farm, too. Couldn't even spare me 2 minutes in a two-hour program. It is funny, though, that – and especially at the end of that race, you know, all of a sudden it was like, oh, my gosh, Ken Mulman, he split the vote. What was this guy about? And the Courier-Journal actually wrote something saying that they liked my platform, but I didn't have the media exposure to get it done. And I'm like, wait a second, guys, you're the media. You wouldn't run my press releases. You didn't invite me to the board. You didn't invite me to do anything. You didn't let me volunteer or – invite me to do anything. How am I going to compete in the media when the media is ignoring me?
And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Ken, I believe that you went on the local talk show here that was before Mandy Cano ran off for Denver, and I believe you were on her show, and even she talked about how much she liked your campaign if you could just get a little bit more, you know, tracking in the media. And she is the media.
Right. Well, and to be fair, though, Mandy did have me on the show once or twice. Leland Conway had me on the show once or twice. You know, there are a few media folks out there in radio that are a little bit more open. And one of the things that people don't quite realize, too, is, you know, I talk to the media. I talk to people in the media. And I don't know if they're maybe just blowing smoke up my butt to make me feel better, but they often say that, you know, people are trying to write stories and the editors kill them. The editors kill the stories.
Yeah.
So, and,
well, like I said,
know,
I don't have much more. I know you probably got to go to the hard break, and I was just going to say, Ken, maybe if you had just sold your soul in your campaign to the global banksters the way that Addison Mitchell, Jerome McConnell Jr. does, if you just sold your soul to Goldman Sachs and Citibank, and you then took the money they gave you and bought ads on WLWT or in the Cincinnati Inquirer, then you would have been a contender in their eyes.
I guess so. Maybe. You know, I think that it certainly would have helped, but I don't know. You know, the media is a funny thing. And, you know, Dale, I appreciate you calling in. I thank you very much. Folks, I just looked at the time. We're way over for a break. So I'm going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll continue on where we have a ton to cover. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Stay tuned, folks. Be back here in a few.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds. are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. And people in the street singing songs and a carrying sign, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network, and we're going to get right back to it here because we are running behind. Let's see here. Yes. In case you're unaware, Kentucky's state pension system is in some trouble. And it's not alone. I mean, there's a lot of states that have serious, serious pension problems going on right now. And Kentucky's no different in that regard. We've basically got a pension system that's unsustainable. And we've had people borrow slash steal slash underfund slash whatever money out of the pension system to make it worse and worse and worse. And essentially, at this point, everyone kind of knows that the pension's in deep trouble. And the state's kind of scratching its head or trying to just – I guess they're just trying to keep it going, hoping that somehow it miraculously recovers. But it has caused a lot of people to try to jump ship. It's caused people to get a little creative because there are some groups that were not state government. They are not government entities that have been paying into the pension system. And in fact, there are some nonprofits and some various different things that have been able to pay in as well. And those things, because of the new requirements to increase the amount being contributed per employee, and because of the likelihood of it not ever being there anyway, some of these groups have been trying to get out of the pension system because long-term, it's going to cost a whole lot of money and you're not going to get a whole lot for it. To give you an idea of how much this is a big deal to the state, there is a group called Seven County Services. They provide mental health services to, well, I'm assuming seven counties, and I don't know exactly which ones, but they're here. They pay into the retirement system, and they went out, tried to get out, and the state retirement system has spent over a half a million dollars so far on legal fees to try to force them to stay in. Because if they get out, there's going to be even more people that want out, and more and more, and it's going to snowball, and it'll snowball quick. Anybody who's not part of the state government that's paying will probably jump, because quite frankly, the system becomes less and less sustainable every day. And as a result, if the quasi-govs all leave the pension system, it's done. I mean, it's already way in the hole. They claim right now in this story that the pension plan is $10.4 billion short of the money it needs to pay all benefits and health insurance promised to the current and future government retirees. Now, I've heard numbers as high as $30 billion, but whatever, we'll take their $10 billion as the number. Understand that that's like more than our annual state budget. That's like, trying to remember how many years' worth of state budget that is. It's several years' worth of budget, and that's assuming that we did nothing else, right? I mean, that would mean that public schools would all close. There'd be no road maintenance. There'd be nothing at all. And the pension's in deep, deep trouble. There's a court case that says that we, the Kentucky taxpayers, are on the hook that if the state ever breaks its we had a balanced budget amendment on the books. It was passed in the 90s, but then a judge made a ruling that said that as long as the checks don't bounce, it's a balanced budget, which I think is hilarious. But the day that it comes, when that day comes and the check does bounce, and on the trajectory we're on, that day will come. The courts have already ruled that retirees, pensioners, are to be paid before anything else gets done. So patching roads takes back seat to paying the pensioners. You know, public schools, back seat to the pensioners. Everything takes back seat to the pensioners. It probably didn't hurt the judge that decided this is probably now a pensioner. But anyhow, the point is that we're in really deep trouble. And in order to fix this, there's a lot of different pieces and parts. There's no silver bullet that says, here's how we fix it. It's just one thing, and boom, we're done. You know, we've talked about industrial hemp on the show before, and I've always emphasized that is not a silver bullet to solve our agricultural problems in the state. But it's something. It's one small piece. And there's going to be lots of small pieces. There's no one big thing that solves the problem. You know, something near and dear to my heart, something that we mentioned just before the break, is the elimination of the state treasurer's office. I ran on that platform in 2011 as the Libertarian Party candidate, and I believe that they've modified the bill to make it match this, that you can take the office of treasurer and bust it into three pieces and maintain the checks and balances while reducing the overall cost of doing business. It's my understanding that the treasurer's office has a $3.1 million annual budget. Now, $3.1 million is not a whole lot in the grand scheme of things. It's not. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's, what, a penny, maybe? You know, if the entire state budget's a dollar, it might be less than a penny. But it's something, and every little bit. And the thing is that you have to realize is that those little bits compound. Because when you can't pay for a little bit, you got to borrow it. Well, when you got to borrow it, that means you got to pay interest on it. And our credit rating has been getting worse. So as a result, every dollar we borrow costs us a lot more than it could or should or would have in the past. And so we need to be looking for things. So the state treasurer bill got through the Senate. It's in the House. I didn't see it. It got sent to some committee in the House, and I don't know if it's going to get out or not. I'm hopeful that it does. That'll be one thing. Oh, there's so many other things, and I don't know. In my stack of stuff here, I switch over from things that we could do to help, and then I've got stuff here that could hurt. And something in the middle here, there's a bill that's been filed to allow for more private-public partnerships or public-private partnerships. We've talked about this on the show before. I'm not a big fan of public-private partnerships, especially if it's a monopoly thing, right? Because the monopolies, they've got you over a barrel. And at the end of the day, if it's the difference between a monopoly corporation and a government doing the same thing, in a way, I almost prefer the government to do it. Not because it's going to be more efficient, but because at least in that scenario, because it's a monopoly, you don't have the power of the market to make your voice heard, right? Normally, if you disagree with a business owner, you can just take your business elsewhere. And that's how you vote with your feet in the market. But in a monopoly situation, especially an artificially created monopoly, which drives me insane, if there's just some law that protects the guy who's in already and makes it so nobody else can get in, that's horrible. But I definitely would prefer government to have control of that than to have some sort of special carved-out exemption for one corporation that they get monopoly control of something. Because in that scenario, they've got no accountability other than even more bad legislation, whatever. So the public-private partnership stuff is interesting. In Northern Kentucky, they've been trying to use that to build the bridge over the Ohio River to replace the one that's here, or actually, I should say, to supplement what's already here. And there was an amendment filed on the public-private – I always say it backwards – public-private partnerships – it's a tongue twister – public-private partnership bill that was proposed. Amendment has already been filed to make it so that it specifically does not apply to the toll bridge or the proposed toll bridge in Northern Kentucky going over into Ohio. And I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. The private partner and the public-private partnerships, I don't know why I'm having so much trouble saying that tonight, the public-private partnerships do provide a means to infuse more money. But I would much rather see, if it comes to monopoly infrastructure, I would much rather see the public sector do monopoly work and the private sector do competitive work. And if the public sector wants to sell naming rights, or for that matter, if a private building owner, they do that all the time, if they want to sell the naming rights to put a name on the top of the building, I'm okay with that. I really couldn't care less if it was the, I'm trying to think of a large enough company. If it was the Procter & Gamble Brent Spence Bridge, I don't care. Who cares about that? Procter & Gamble advertises. They have some sign that says, "Ooh, the Procter & Gamble Brent Spence Bridge." Right? I mean, okay, great. Doesn't hurt my feelings. Doesn't hurt anybody else's feelings. The bridge is there. It's paid for. I have no problem with advertising in that way. But if you give monopoly control of a bridge to a corporation and there's nothing to stop them from jacking up the rates, you look at what's been done in Chicago, where they sold all the parking to a public-private partnership. They sold it to a private company, 99-year lease, and there's no rate controls. And in the first 3 years, parking rates tripled. That's what happens when you give monopoly control to a private company. Because they don't have the check and balance of the ballot box. They're not the ones that have to go back to the voters and go, "See, this is what I did." Or there's no other alternative that consumers can go, "Well, those guys are idiots. I'm not going to use their product. I'm going to go somewhere else." That's the problem with these PPPs, these 3Ps, however you want to call them, is that they typically are selling monopoly infrastructure. And so I have a big problem with that in general. So anyway, that's piece. The smoking ban issue won't go away, and I don't want to harp on this, but the really short answer is they say they've got 46 votes to pass the existing bill. The bill sponsor actually filed an amendment herself to the bill that would exempt e-cigarettes and exempt existing cigar bars. It would prevent the creation of new ones, but would exempt existing cigar bars. I think that's closer to something that could pass, which I think is why they have now 46 votes in the House out of a 50 or 51 that would be needed. But I don't see the need. I just don't see the need for a smoking ban, and especially if you go and look at the studies that were done in Ohio, when you actually break the categories apart and you ask about places, you ask about restaurants, and you ask about bars, in Ohio specifically, there is popular support to repeal the smoking ban in bars. It's not just that they don't support a ban in bars. There's support to repeal the Ohio ban in bars. That's in a public survey because they broke those apart. If you look at the surveys they're doing here in Kentucky, they always glob them together so that people are forced into a yes or no situation. And that's bad. It's a false dichotomy. Certainly the legislators can change it so that's not the case. So here's some fun things about the police. I wanted to get to these tonight anyway. Story from the Washington Post, good news and bad news on recording the police. The good news is you're constitutionally allowed to do it. The bad news is the police don't think you do. And basically there's been a number of stories where the police have been arresting people for videotaping the police officers, even though it's not interfering with their job in any way, even though they're not obstructing justice. In fact, I would venture to say that the police, in a way, by arresting someone for videotaping an incident where they're involved with the police directly, is in fact obstructing justice. But that's another story. The police are, not real hip to being recorded. They want to be able to control that video and control the situation, control the information that gets out about what's going on. I'm a firm believer that in the public sphere, anyone has the right to be recorded in the public sphere. And by public, going back to the smoking ban, public versus private, right? Inside of a business, that's private property. Inside your home, that's private property. When you're out on a sidewalk, that's public property. And that's why, even though I disagree with the policy, you see places that are able to use the cameras that record people out on the sidewalks, but they're not allowed to install those cameras in a private business because there is a difference between a private business, private property, and public property. And so I firmly believe that recording anybody in the public sphere is totally and completely legitimate, totally legitimate, because it's in the public. That's the whole point. It's public. And as long as you're not using it for commercial purposes, you don't need a waiver. It's a matter of having the freedom to record what's going on, not just in your mind, but with a recording device. No big whoop. So I just find it amazing. And all the while, coming a little closer to home, Kentucky is getting ready to set up checkpoints, not for DUI, not for drugs, but to find out if you're eating or drinking a non-alcoholic beverage while driving. It's a distracted driving checkpoint. And it's funny because I brought this up when they were talking about the cell phone texting ban that's now in place, that we didn't need another law for that because distracted driving is already against the law. It is already against the law to swerve all over the place and speed up and slow down and whatever. There's reckless operation. There's reckless endangerment if it's even worse. There's already things on the books for this. So we didn't need a texting while driving law. And it's funny because we don't have an eating while driving law or a smoking while driving law or a drinking non-alcoholic beverages while driving law. But they're going to enforce now the laws that they could have enforced with texting, and they're going to enforce it on silly things like eating food or drinking non-alcoholic beverages. And there's a certain amount of distraction in anything you do that takes your eyes off the road for even a moment. But at the same time, if you're doing proper following distance, if you're paying attention to the road, if you're aware of the road conditions before you do that thing, you can do those things safely. You can change the radio station. You can take your eyes off the road for a moment to look at the radio and look back and not end up in a blazing inferno explosion accident, right? Because you've got time to look for a moment. That's no big whoop. You've got don't we have anything better to do? Don't our police, I mean, has it gotten to the point where the DUIs are so few and people have slowed down and that they're just not getting enough revenue that they need to be able to write more tickets for eating while driving? I mean, really? Really? Come on. I'll be the first to admit, I eat and drive all the time. It's efficient. It's not hard to do. You keep your eyes on the road. You keep one hand on the wheel. You keep your other hand on your sandwich. It's no big deal. And I'll tell you, if I get a ticket for that or if anybody else gets a ticket for that, please fight it. Please fight it. Take that sucker to court. Because even if you lose, that ticket's going to be $100-something, almost $200. So at least make the state earn it. I mean, seriously. That's kind of ridiculous, the eating while driving. And they're planning on doing this St. Patrick's Day weekend and holiday weekends. They're going to be looking out for those eating while driving people on holiday weekends. I mean, maybe it's just an excuse. Maybe it's just an excuse so that they can say we're doing an eating while driving checkpoint instead of a DUI checkpoint. Maybe that's their whole grand scheme here. But they actually call it. It's Operation Raid. R-A-I-D, it's Remove Aggressive, Impaired, and Distracted Drivers from Kentucky Roadways. And it's going to last for about a year. And I think it's absolutely silly. Eating and drinking. They're going to be looking for you. You're munching down on that Big Mac, or actually I wouldn't eat a Big Mac while driving. That's way too messy. But, you know, a chicken sandwich or that double cheeseburger while driving, you're going to get a $200 ticket for distracted driving because you can't – oh, there's so many jokes about driving and chewing gum to be made. I don't know. It's just ridiculous to me, and I don't get it. Oh, man, we're out of time, and I got so much to do. We're going to have to hold off the Obamacare stuff till next week. But the real short answer is, hey – yeah, your insurance costs too much, you know, Obamacare causing you harm. Well, don't worry. While they're taking and shutting down the payday lenders, working to shut them down, they're spinning up what is being dubbed Obama loans, which is basically you'll be able to go and get a payday loan from the post office. What? So payday loans are bad unless the government or a government-owned corporation, because the post office is a government-owned corporation, it's not the government, does it. And then it's okay. But we'll get into more of that next week. Folks, we're out of time, and I appreciate you all tuning in. You know, it's been a heck of a few weeks, and I'm going to be in and out and have troubles with work and whatnot for the next couple weeks. But we'll be here. If not live, I'll have something pre-recorded every week for you. I do appreciate y'all tuning in. Please tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and have more people listen. They can always catch the podcast, which starts right after this show. So until next time, folks, have a good evening, have a good week, and we'll see you next Sunday. This has been Kem Ullman for Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Take care.